welcome and thank you for listening to the Dr. Mom Sage Advice Podcast. Are you a single mom who is tired of feeling overwhelmed by doing it all? Have you been asking yourself, what is my real purpose outside of motherhood and my career? Are you tired of yelling, feeling mom guilt at the end of the day? If you're ready to go from chaos to confidence in your mindset and in parenting, then this is the place for you. Here we are authentic, transparent, and frankly, we're here to burst all of those mom guilt bubbles and empower you to take back control of your life so you can go from just surviving in motherhood to thriving and walking confidently in your best purpose-filled life God intended for you. I'm your host, Dr. Catricia, a board certified bilingual pediatrician. I'm also fellowship trained in pediatric urgent care medicine. That's just my fancy title for the weekdays, but 24/7, I'm the proud single mommy of my little wild mini me toddler. I'm also a postpartum depression survivor. Now, I'm on a mission to empower other single moms to take back control of their life. Through candid conversations, we will learn, be encouraged, inspired, and committed to making practical changes so we can be our best selves for the queen who reigns already inside of us. So sit back and relax, mommy. This is your time to unwind. Go ahead, grab your favorite drink. Pour me one too, queen, because it's time for our girl talk. Let's talk about all things motherhood, mindset, and even medicine. No, not like medicine, but you know, remember, I'm a pediatrician. So I'm gonna go ahead and give you some pediatric tips on how to parent, right? I hope that you love listening to and learning from the podcast, but please remember, it's not intended to be a substitution for a physician-patient relationship. All right, queen, if you're ready, I'm ready. Let's go. Welcome back to another Medical Mondays. It's your host, Dr. Catricia, board-certified bilingual pediatrician, also a purpose and parent coach for single mothers. And this episode of Medical Mondays, we're talking about updates on COVID vaccines. That's right. If you scroll down the episodes, I think this summer I gave a little information after the CDC went ahead, the FDA went ahead and gave an emergency use authorization approval for the Pfizer COVID-19 vaccination to be administered in children 12 years and above. And most recently, earlier this month, they have now been able to publish the results of their studies and receive emergency use authorization to again begin administering vaccinations to the ages of 5 to 11. My daughter falls into that age group and she has had her first vaccination. So in this episode, I'm going to share our experience and answer a lot of those questions that you most likely have and debunk some myths as well to help you make the best informed decision for your family. Stay tuned. And we're back. So I just want to share with you guys my experience as a mommy and my knowledge as a pediatrician in regards to why I decided to get my daughter vaccinated. Okay. So COVID-19 shots for kids, you know, they have been under the emergency use of authorization approved for greater than age 12 for the last 6 months, right? And we knew and saw that as more adults and more adolescents were being vaccinated, we start to see our younger children, our population, become more ill with COVID-19 illness. Why? Well, because the virus needs a host. It's going to survive. It's going to do whatever it needs to survive. And in order to survive, it needs a home. And that's your cells, my cells. But when you have the vaccine or a booster like I do, then you have an extra layer of protection. Doesn't mean that you can't get the illness. Doesn't mean that you can't spread it. It means that my chances of getting the illness and becoming severely ill to the point of hospitalization and or death is very, very low, you guys. And as more adults and more adolescents were getting vaccinated, more of my patients were coming in with COVID. And although majority of children do well with just mild symptoms, there's no way to predict how it's going to cause long-term effects of the long haulers, as we call them, or even that multi-inflammatory syndrome that a lot of children were getting this past summer. You know, more than 8,300 children ages 5 to 11 have been hospitalized with COVID-19 because of a serious illness. Again, majority have mild symptoms, but there are still children who do get serious illness. And according to a CDC analysis, the number of children and adolescents admitted to the hospital increased nearly fivefold over the summer months amid the Delta surge. What did I tell you? The Delta surge seemed to have happened right at the same time as we were vaccinating more adolescents and more of our adults. And I would explain to parents that as more people are getting vaccinated, the virus is looking for a host. It wants to survive. It wants to hold on to someone and to replicate itself, because that's what viruses do. They're tricky. They're sneaky. They don't want to die. So it's going to change itself over time, right? Think about the flu strain from year to year to year. Our flu vaccine changes based on the strain and the epidemic that happened in the year before. That's how they tailor the science so that we can have it could be the most effective for the next flu season that we're entering, right? The thing about COVID-19, it's hard to predict. It really is. Have you not seen that it's such a beast? Like the person in the beginning, they told us, oh no, you're going to have symptoms. Then we realized there are people who don't have symptoms who are still passing it on. Then they said, oh no, it's only going to affect people who are like immunocompromised or really sick. But then we started seeing people, God, like rest their soul, in their 30s and 20s who had never been ill but had been exposed to it and they were dying. Because it's unpredictable. This virus is a beast. This virus has no remorse for anyone, and it affects whoever it affects, and it infects whoever it infects. And when we can't predict what child is going to have the illness, and we can't predict if their illness is going to be mild or serious to the point of leading them into the ICU or causing them to have this multi-system inflammatory syndrome, for short, MISC. More than 5,000 children and teens have developed this condition in the last year and a half. And the median age of kids getting MISC is 9 years old. We can't predict which kids are going to get it. We can't predict which kids are going to get COVID-19 that leads to this MISC. Roughly 30% of kids who were hospitalized with COVID-19 had no underlying health conditions that would have put them at increased risk for it. But they got it. And I actually had a patient who had this. And the sequelae of MISC, you know, you have to be on IV steroids and they give you these, you know, immunoglobulins and, you know, to help your immune system calm down the inflammatory response that it's creating. And there's long-term effects, like it can affect your heart and your lungs. And this is someone that potentially could be healthy, was probably healthy before, but now have these long-haul effects. We have a vaccine. And we need to do everything that we can to protect ourselves and to protect our children against what this virus is very capable of doing, especially in our children who are underrepresented and who are in marginalized communities and don't have access to the same quality of care as do other children, because they're just as important. Black, Native American, Hispanic children, children of color were 3 times more likely to be hospitalized than white children. And that's data from the CDC. Why do you think that is happening? Why do you think that they are presenting with the same symptoms but are less likely to be hospitalized? Because of the inequities that exist and the racial disparities that exist within our healthcare system. That's why. For some clinicians, the argument of vaccination comes down to the idea that no child should ever die from a disease that could have been prevented by simply getting a shot. COVID-19, yes, is now a vaccine-preventable disease. We have the vaccine technology. It was created. It wasn't rushed. mRNA technology has been around for years. It's actually how they've been studying, you know, to develop vaccines against Ebola and other coronaviruses, the other SARS viruses that are out there. It's not new at all. And what happened was, it's because all of the vaccination companies, like the German company, the American companies, they kind of started to share their data. And actually that expedited the process and allowed us to develop, already knowing and having the science technology previously, this vaccine, because the sequence of the virus was already determined and calculated out early on. Like, I think it was like January 2020, or it may have been the same year, December 2019, once it was first discovered as an outbreak in Wuhan, China. So some of the questions you may be having are, is number one, well, how do we know the COVID-19 vaccine works really well for kids? Well, the clinical trial conducted by Pfizer and BioNTech studied a dose that's smaller than the dose that they give to adults and adolescents greater than age 12. It's about a third of the dose, actually. And the lower dose was chose to minimize the side effects, but still prompting a strong immune response. The data the drug companies presented to the FDA showed that the vaccine was 90.7%, almost 91%, you guys, effective against symptomatic COVID-19. The antibody response to the vaccine was comparable to the one seen in people ages 16 to 25 years old. That's great. What does that mean? That means that for those who are receiving the vaccination, compared to those in the placebo group, that there is a 90% efficacy, that they did not have any symptoms of having severe or moderate illness that actually warranted hospitalization or caused death, right? That's a great thing, especially amid the recent Delta surge in hospitalization rates that were 10 times higher in unvaccinated adolescents than they were in vaccinated ones. So we know that even if you become ill with COVID-19, it doesn't lead you into the hospital. It doesn't cause severe illness. Another question parents have all the time, which makes sense to ask, what are the common side effects? And the vaccination trials for this age group, 5 to 11, there were no new safety problems that were identified. The most common side effects documented in the study were similar to those of other age groups that had the COVID-19 vaccine. Being the most common, I'm sure you can already guess it, pain at the injection site. There's pain when the needle goes in, there's pain when the needle goes out, and probably for the next hour or two, there's going to be some soreness if you bump into it or forgot that you got a shot in that arm, right? Other side effects, fatigue, tired, headache, and muscle aches. Kids who get the vaccine feel ultimately fine and normalized back to their normal self within 2 to 3 days. Should you be concerned about serious side effects like myocarditis? That's a great question. In very rare cases following the vaccination by Pfizer and Moderna, people have developed inflammation of the heart muscle, which is also called the myocarditis, okay? And the Pfizer clinical trials, however, for 5 to 11-year-olds, there were no cases of myocarditis, although the company acknowledged that the trials were not large enough to pick up such rare events. So what does that mean? That essentially the percentage of cases that we saw in those that adolescent group from 12 to 18, was it? Like the percentage of the cases of myocarditis that were occurring were no larger than just rare happenstance for the normal population, meaning that myocarditis isn't something new. Myocarditis can happen after viral infections. Myocarditis is happening after you become ill with something like the flu or some other cold symptoms. And just like the virus can attack your respiratory tract system, it can attack the linings of your lungs, which is pleuritis, or it can attack the linings of your heart muscle, which is the myocarditis, or it can attack the linings in the joint fluids of your joint spaces, which is called synovitis. And actually we see that and children all the time, you know, after they have an illness, maybe a couple weeks later, they'll present sometimes with like joint pain. And that gives us on our differential a diagnosis of this particular, this could be what we call like a joint synovitis or, you know, post-inflammatory, post, you know, infection changes because it happens because the virus goes and just attacks different areas of your body. Okay. Next question. What if you just decide, oh, is it okay just to wait to see how the vaccinations go before you vaccinate your kid? A lot of parents are thinking like you. And I can tell you as a pediatrician and my colleagues, other pediatricians, we're urging parents not to wait. First of all, because your children will still be at risk for getting sick from COVID-19. And you can't wait until millions and millions of doses are given before you decide. The virus is going to take every opportunity it can to infect someone. And the more people who are vaccinated, that means the less opportunity and less host it has to find. And think about it. If we started vaccinating the adults first and then the adolescents, who is at most risk to get the virus now? The people who are unvaccinated. And that was our 5 to 11-year-old group, especially as they returned to school this past fall. Even though COVID-19 cases are trending downward, 90% of counties in the U.S. are still classified by the CDC as having high or substantial viral spread. And because the Delta variant is more transmissible, that means it's more contagious, kids can get Delta and can get quite sick from it. You cannot predict in a normal healthy child which child is going to get sick and which child is not going to get very sick. So having this vaccination in your arsenal as another defense mechanism to protect them is the best way in this moment you can protect your child against getting severe COVID illness. Next question. If your child is 11, should you wait to get them the higher adult dose of age 12? That's a great question. And actually, I think it's important for your parents to realize and to understand that the lower dosage provided just the same amount of a robust immune response as a higher dose did in older kids with less side effects. So really, if your child is 11 and they're on the verge of being 12, there's no need to wait. Give them the lower dose. Have them be vaccinated with their lower dose because it's going to give them the same immune response that they need and have a side effect profile that's less compared to the higher dose. And if your child turns 12 between their first and second dose, the American Academy of Pediatrics suggests sticking to the lower 10 microgram dose for both shots. Remember, the Pfizer dose, just like Moderna, which right now still is only for 18 and above, they both need two doses. I just spoke in Spanish. They both need two doses, or maybe they and the Pfizer one is separated 21 days apart. So they happen to have their birthday in between. The American Academy of Pediatrics says stick to the original dosage, which would be the lower one of the 10 micrograms given to all children ages 5 through 11. Okay. Next great question. What if my child is used to wearing a mask by now? Can you just rely on the mask for prevention? Well, masks have been a proven tool for preventing the outbreaks in school, but experts point out that indoor masking can't go on forever. And even though they may be wearing their mask, think about when you're going into a restaurant or when they are taking it down in school to sip, or when you're wanting to travel and you're eating snacks on the airplane. At some point, we're going to have to fully open back up, and masks are not going to be mandated in every place that you go, right? So pediatricians and infectious disease specialists at Stanford University are saying that we can't forever have mitigation, particularly in schools, and that children need to return to a more open life as we all do. So masks are not going to be the end all. They're not a cure. They are a mitigation tool that we needed to implement early on to really slow down the rapid transmission that was occurring back when COVID was first, back when the COVID-19 illness first became an outbreak. So hopefully you guys will take this information and understand and make an informed decision about what to do with your child and know that before this ever had an emergency use of authorization, thousands of children were enrolled into the study, and that the side effect profile is very minimal, and it's similar to what you would see after any other vaccination. Their common childhood vaccination, they're going to have pain at the site. They may feel a little fatigue. My daughter, what we did, and here's some more pediatric mommy tips, is we talked about it. My daughter was 3 at the start of COVID. She is now 5. Isn't that crazy? And we, to go from being age 1 and 2 to now like an early 3-year-old, and all of a sudden mommy's saying you can't touch things, you can't touch the door, put this sanitizer on, which she calls this sanitizer, all the time. It's now having to wear a mask. That was a big adjustment for her. But children are resilient, right? They have learned to adapt, to do virtual schooling. They, missed out on outings and missing their grandparents and not being able to travel and do all the things that we normally would do, birthday parties, all of it, you name it. We have had a wild 1.5 years in this pandemic. And she knows that I have had received my shots, and we talk about it. When the first, I think, EUA for ages 12 and above came out, I explained to her, and she said, "Oh, well, now when everyone gets their shot, then COVID will be over." It's like she just totally understood what what the Z-naught meant. They're like, "Hey, once we get this number down to 0, then this virus dies out because it can't be passed on from person to person." Okay, my future scientist. So about a couple of weeks leading up to me making an appointment for her needing to get a shot, it was just approved this first week in November, but there were, obviously news articles and conversations in the last week of October. So saying it's coming soon. And thank God, because she just turned 5, a few weeks ago. So we talked about it, and I explained, why we would be getting a shot, the best thing you could ever do for your child, a child who is of developmental age to understand what's going on, is not to lie. Don't trick them. It really makes sense to have a conversation, answer their questions. You know, just as adults, we have fear about things. You're not going to want your physician to go in there and say, oh yeah, this procedure, oh, easy peasy. If you're asking about the pain and the recovery time, we, you know, do our due diligence and we, you know, and are ethical and tell you what to expect. And we should do the same thing for our kid. So for literally 2 days before the shot, she kept saying, is it going to hurt? Yes, it's going to hurt. What's it going to feel like? Well, it's a pinch. And then is it like a pinch like this? So then she would try to pinch me, you guys, like a little bitty, like a small little scratch. I'm like, no, it doesn't hurt like that. Then I would pinch her a little bit. She was like this. And I'm like, for 2 days, back and forth. She wanted to know what it would be like. And I told her, as soon as you feel it, it will be gone. And then we divert that attention from the pain. We deflect it and we talk about what we can do afterwards. You know, what special treat would you like? Would you like to pick out a special prize? In fact, I had to make a whole extra trip, you guys. This was last week. She got it. Was sick all last week with some random viral cold. It wasn't COVID because I ended up getting tested for COVID the same day she got her COVID shot. And we were at the store and she saw this toy and I didn't want to buy it in the moment. And I was like, no. Maybe we can come back another time. Or maybe that can be the special prize that you want for after you get your, when you're really brave and you get your shot. And she agreed. And the morning of the shot, you know, I didn't take her to school because I didn't know how she was going to feel after the shot. So I just kept her out. Not that I was expecting a lot of side effects, but just not knowing where she would be mentally. And if she had, you know, a little arm pain or some fatigue afterwards, I wanted to be able to observe her. So we went to the clinic in the morning and again, still talked about it and prepared her. And she saw other kids in there. She was pretty quiet. We got in the room and step by step, I mean, you just have to know the personality of your child, but like she's someone that needs to see everything. She needs to have it explained. And I also will tell you, she's someone that you would think wasn't the child of a doctor because the way the girl bloody runner screams and flips out and tries to open the door and move people's hand, I'm like, oh my gosh. So we do the whole maneuver and hold her still and she gets in and she cries. She gets her Band-Aid and then she was mad for a moment and then she was done. She was over it, literally within like 30 seconds. I remember when she used to get her baby shots, all the shots under two. Woo, the clinic we went to in Miami, they didn't have any combination vaccines. So it literally was like one poke for every single thing, you guys. And I felt so horrible. And I just would immediately nurse her afterwards to calm her down. But now it's like, there's no nursing, obviously. She's five. But I don't really have to do anything, you know, to console her. Like we prepared for it. We knew what was going to happen. It was done, you know, and then she'll ask questions of like, is it still in there? I'm like, no, the needle's not in there. and then she just gets distracted by something else, the sticker they gave her, or the lollipop, while we waited for me to get my COVID test. So that was our experience. We are scheduled to go back again the week of Christmas for our second one. And it will be well. And it will be well because it will protect my daughter and give her an extra defense layer of protection. And knowing that even though she's been in school this whole time, it's been by the grace of God and my prayers and everything that we do in our home and making sure that we're staying, you know, maintaining social distancing. And I've been vaccinated, you guys, for over a year now. My first dose was in December of last year, and I still wear my mask. And I've always worn it out of respect for her, knowing that she wasn't vaccinated. So wherever we go, we wear masks together. You know, so there's times when we're in the elevator, like in our condo, and I have a mask on and she doesn't. Like, I'm always wearing my mask. It's just a habit. And after she gets her second vaccination, there will definitely be this sigh of release. I can breathe knowing that now we can travel internationally and do all the other things that I've been wanting to do, like go on our next cruise, which I postponed and didn't do because she wasn't vaccinated. So again, hope this was helpful, this Medical Monday for you guys. Remember, you can always shoot me a DM, an email. Let me know what other medical topics you're interested in learning more about. Do remember that although I'm a pediatrician, I'm not your child's pediatrician. So it's always important that you remember this is not medical advice. This is Dr. Mom's sage advice. And until the next episode, you take care.